Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1pm, with a repeat Thursday at 6pm and Sunday at 10am, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Happy New Year and welcome to the Happy Hour.
It's Paulina and Holly here bringing you the best of 2021 today.
So kicking off part one of our special look back episode, here's a nice throwback for you.
Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes having the time of their lives. And to be fair, so are we today on the Happy Hour with our best of 2021 look back.
It's an exciting one, as it's part one of our special today, and you can catch part two this Sunday at 10am.
Now, of course, we're going to look back at our best interviews from the year today, and as always, we'll also throw in some great music.
We're going to hear from adventurer and blind pilot Miles Hilton Barber, as well as comedian and fellow presenter here on RNIB Connect Radio, Georgie Morrell.
Plus some more well-being goodies. So we'll hear tips for winter well-being, recommend a good meditation app for you. And now we are going to remind ourselves a little bit what is mindfulness.
Yep. So with a little refresher, here's Chris Simpson.
So I often get the question, what is mindfulness and how does it differ to well-being? Well, I would say that mindfulness is a series of activities that enable our well-being. But the most important kind of thing to remember with mindfulness is the point of mindfulness is a kind of to ensure that we're staying in the present. So, I mean, this is oversimplifying it a little bit, but it's often kind of thought that, you know, we can often feel sad when we're focusing things on that happened in the past. And we often feel anxious when we focus on the things in the future. And so the best thing to do is to kind of stay present where we can. And these are techniques to ensure we're staying present. Now, the background of it and the roots of it come from Buddhism, but you don't have to be spiritual and to appreciate and to apply some of these techniques. So the first tip is to start the day by consciously acknowledging and respecting how you are feeling. And by that, what I mean is, what are my thoughts this morning? What are my emotions? And what is my body telling me? So let's go over each of those. So often we can start the day and we might feel tired. We might feel happy. We might feel heavy. We might feel light. We might feel energized. We might feel hungover. We might feel groggy. We might feel frustrated. And often these feelings are in the back of our mind and end up governing how we behave throughout a day. So our interactions with our loved ones, or maybe even our work colleagues and our managers. And often these can be accentuated under, you know, pressure, for instance, and under deadlines and that kind of thing. So the idea of mindfulness is that, and this particular tip, is to stop that being something that's in the back of our mind and actually kind of externalizing and writing down, okay, so what are my thoughts today? What are my emotions? And what is my body telling me? And listening to your body. Because, of course, if you, for instance, you know, this is an extreme example, but if you had toothache for a whole day from the beginning of waking up and then you had it for the rest of the day and you didn't have any anaesthetic, that's going to impact on how you're going to be interacting with people. You're going to be snappy, you're going to be frustrated, you're going to be in pain. And you might have other kind of muscles and aches and pains, like backache, for instance, that is going to govern how you feel. So just make sure that we're taking this from being in the back of our minds to the front of our minds and actually externalizing it and writing it down and thinking, okay, what can I do differently today that might mean that I won't feel like this tomorrow, but also what do I need to tweak about my day to make sure I have a success? Do I need to avoid certain people, for instance, or do I need to stretch, for instance, or whatever it might be, but what's the actions you need to take to get into a good place? And that leads us quite nicely into tip two, which is, and this sounds quite new age and quite hippie for those who are new to mindfulness, but do bear with us because this is a really, really good technique, which is essentially to start a dialogue between you and your body. You know, when you're in pain, for instance, and even if that's a very dull pain, that is your body talking to you. That is your body communicating, saying, I need some attention. So the idea is that you do a body scan. So starting kind of, you know, focusing on your toes, then going up through your feet, through your ankles, through your calves, and just doing this body scan up through your knees and focusing, is there any tension? Is there any pain? Is there any discomfort? Up through to your pelvis, up through your stomach, up to your chest, and notice your breathing. Then maybe if you stretch out your arms, so running through kind of your shoulders down to your fingertips, do you notice anything? Then up through your neck, how does your shoulders feel and your back? Is your body trying to tell you something? And then up kind of behind your ears, and then up through your face, your nose, your eyes, to the top of your head. That's a body scan, and you can spend some time doing that. And it's kind of recommended you do that 2 or 3 times throughout the day. So you might want to say, okay, I'll put a reminder in my diary to do it at 11:30 and to do it at 3:30. And just focus on each of those areas. Notice any tension or discomfort, and then just imagine that area softening and relaxing. And if a thought or emotion arises, notice it without judging and then let it go and breathe and relax. And that's a really, really good mindfulness tip. And we would suggest you do that in the morning and two other times during the day. Listen to what your body is trying to tell you. Our third tip is to download the Headspace app or a similar app. And so essentially you just put your headphones on or in and listen to a guided exercise in a particular area that you might be interested in. And, you know, Headspace say that, you know, using it for 10 days can increase your happiness by 16%, which is quite a lot in quite a short period of time. And here's some of the topics they cover. So they have like short exercises, which are kind of meditation for stress, meditation for anxiety, meditation for beginners, meditation to sleep better, tips around how to power nap effectively, mindful eating, mindful cooking, meditation and weight loss, how to be more empathetic. I could go on and on. Loads and loads of great stuff on there. And it's free to download for a trial. And then you have to pay for it afterwards. Now, you might not want to pay for it. You might feel that you don't need it. You might find another app that is similar, that is free. But this is one that has kind of been used by blind partially sighted colleagues of ours and is a very, very popular app worldwide. It's one of the most downloaded apps in the last couple of years. And finally, the final tip is to embrace kind of green spaces if you can. You know, it might be a case that you can do that on a lunch break if you're close to a park or on a walk after work. Being around green spaces increases our serotonin and makes us feel better. So if you've ever been a kind of a nature person and you feel better in green spaces, that is legitimate. That is a real thing, as is being around open water. And now, not all of us have the opportunity for that. But if you've ever been someone who says, you know, they love being by a beach and being by the open sea and feel calmed by that, that is a legitimate thing as well. You get an increase in your serotonin. So if you can walk, you know, maybe you're near a lake or by a river if you're lucky, or maybe if you're luckier than everybody and by a beach, then fantastic. Try and spend some time around there. Okay, so stay safe, stay well, and stay connected.
Thank you so much, Chris Simpson there, and shortly I'll be chatting with one-eyed legend and comedian Georgie Morrell. Georgie Morrell is a stand-up comedian, award-nominated actor, writer, and host of Sounds of the Silver Screen here on RNIB Connect Radio. At the age of 3, Georgie was diagnosed with chronic arthritis. 1 year later, she developed glaucoma and cataracts in both eyes. In her late teens, she lost the sight in her left eye, and at the age of 21, she lost the sight in her right eye. For around a year, before the wizards at Moorfields restored 90% of the vision in this eye. The self-proclaimed one-eyed legend joins me now. Hey, Georgie.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I can't complain, to be honest. Apart from the pandemic, I'm all right.
For anyone that hasn't heard you before, how did you get into comedy?
How did I get into comedy? It's actually quite a cute story. So I trained as an actor and I still act every now and again. And I finished drama school and obviously I had no work. I came out of it thinking I was going to be the next Helen Mirren or something, and that just didn't happen. And I did a couple of plays, just sort of fringy stuff. And I played two comedy roles. And I'd always secretly wanted to go into comedy. I never thought I could be a stand-up, probably because there weren't that many role models for, you know, one-eyed little Georgie growing up. But it was something I wanted to. And I had very funny brothers as well. So I learned to be funny because of them. And I was thinking about it with comedy. I did well in these plays. And I got chatting to a mate of mine, fellow actor Felix, a very good friend of mine. I said, I want to get into comedy, but I don't know which way to go about it. And then we happened to get chatting about my eyesight. And when I was 21, my right eye, my only seeing eye, I decided to go blind for a bit as well, which was inconvenient. And it was a period of not knowing if I was going to get any sight back at all. As you said, the wizards at Moorfields, they did some surgeries, put a few bits back together, and I got a fair bit of sight back in that eye, and it's been stabilised for the time being. And I told him that story, and he was like, you should tell people that. And apparently the way that I told it to him was quite amusing. And it just went from there. I wrote a show called A Poke in the Eye and developed it, took it to Edinburgh Fringe, and I haven't looked back since.
Has humour played a part in the way you view your vision impairment?
Yes, it plays a part in every way that I view life. It's a survival technique. It's not like, I think people make the jump that you're visually impaired and therefore you're straight to having a sense of humour. It's all the little things that come with having a disability is actually when you need them. It's extraordinary what the body will do and it'll adapt to. You'll get a visual impairment or another disability and the body adapts and you find a way through. But it's a little thing. So it's the long hospital waits. It's the bumping into things. You have to have a sense of humour to get through those because that's the stuff that can grind you down. Also, if I've learned anything, and it's so cliche, is life is so short. I want to enjoy it as best I can. And having a giggle is the only way to do it.
When you lost your sight for a year, was humour something you clung on to or was it something you pushed away?
That's a really good question. I pushed it away. I didn't handle what happened very well. I pushed everything away. I completely shut down because it was a total grey area. It took a while for the doctors to work out why the eye had done it. I have a history of uveitis and secondary glaucoma, and what the eye was doing wasn't quite tallying up with what those conditions do. So I went from one consultant to another. He had a look, we tried one thing and then another. And then in the end he said, we're just gonna bite the bullet, do a bit of surgery and get in there, for want of a better phrase. And he made the right choice, but because I couldn't, you know, was I adapting to life with a more severe visual impairment or was I gonna get some of it back? We didn't know. So I just shut down until we knew what was happening. And that was months and months. I don't regret how I behave because it's too damn late for that, but you know, why bother regretting anything? But I didn't handle it the best way that I could. A sense of humor kicked in, I'd say, more when I was able to reflect on what had happened and also a way to process the trauma of it and the trauma of when I was little as well. Because 3 years old, I was so tiny. And I didn't understand, you know, why I was having to have eye surgery and why I couldn't see as well.
Did humour help when you were growing up? All those hospital visits and just generally navigating life with a vision impairment?
It did in a way because I got two older brothers, and my mum and my dad, and they all have terrific senses of humour, especially my brothers. They have a great sense of fun. And if anyone who's grown up with older brothers, they will torment you and they will make fun of you and they will tease you. And it really toughens you up, for one, but they were also just so funny. And that was how they dealt with it. my brothers were suddenly presented with this little sister who was in and out of hospital, my parents having to take me. And, you know, they thought, what do we do to cheer her up? You know, how do we make this better? And it's like, we can't fix it. So we will make her laugh. We will entertain her. And that sort of fed into me. And I sort of took that out into my life. And my mum's got a great sense of humour and my dad certainly does.
Do you use humour as a coping mechanism today?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. People have challenged me before that it isn't the healthiest way to approach things, but I will rebuke that and argue the case. I don't think it is the only way. I have been into therapy. I have taken it very, very seriously, my disability, for when humor wasn't actually quite enough. And I'm proud that I did that and it was the right decision. But humor will be with me, you know, every step of the way, because sometimes you don't have many options. Life's unfair. It's rubbish. We have certainly learned that in the last year. So sometimes you just have to find the funny in it. Or you cry. And I know what I'd rather do.
You're really open about your vision impairment and you don't take yourself too seriously. But have you ever found yourself clashing with members of the sight loss community because of differences in opinion or approaches to living life with sight loss?
Yeah, actually, I've clashed with people who are visually impaired and people who are not, as if there is a sort of one-way road to deal with it. That's why I think there is a disabled community and I'm glad for it. However, we are not all the same and we all have a very individual story. No two disabilities are the same, especially with visual impairment. You know, the sliding scale of visual impairment is huge. And that's something that I think everyone could be a bit better educated on. To sort of help with a bit more empathy, really. Loads of people say that sense of humour is the way to do it and they take it all very seriously, and fine, if that works for them, if that helps them, you know, get through the bad days, go for it. And if I've learned as well working in comedy, some people just don't have a sense of humour, Holly. It's just the way of it. And they can, you know, do whatever makes them feel good to manage. But I won't be dictated to by anybody of how I'll cope with my visual impairment.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
It's tough that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to have said that. I've just been like, oh, okay, then maybe I should do and be this, or I should be this. No, it's something that's come with age.
Would you say that humour helps you when talking about your vision impairment to others, or comes in useful during any awkward interactions?
Yeah. And I'm always quite careful of it as well. I make sure that if there is a sort of attention about visual impairment and discussing it, because I know some people do get a bit wary around it. They don't say the wrong thing. They don't do the wrong thing, which really people shouldn't worry about as much as they think. It's really not a huge problem. And I will just break the tension, but I'm always sort of careful. It's like, who am I breaking the tension for? Who am I trying to make feel better about this? Is it for me or is it for them? And so I always monitor those situations because I want to make people feel better, but not to the point, not when it's at my expense or it's a disservice to what I've been through and what many others have as well. So I find straight talking about it and being quite conversational is the best way as well, because it's an everyday norm for the likes of you and me, and other people should treat it that way too.
How do you find the balance between both of those things?
I tend to just sort of gauge the individual and why they're asking, why are we having this conversation about my visual impairment to begin with? Is it a genuine interest? Is it morbid curiosity? Because I'm afraid sometimes it is. People sometimes are just interested and a bit nosy. And I don't mind that because I'm quite nosy as well. And also I think something my mum always said to me, and she's quoted it from somebody else, is that knowledge is power. The more people know about a disability, the closer we can get to some better representation and equality, because the more they know about it and that I live a perfectly good life, then it's like, oh, I don't have to be, you know, vision impairments and disability. It's not something scary and horrible that we should ignore, because you can live with it and be absolutely fine.
Oh, I think that's such a positive thing to end on. And it's really nice to hear how you find the humour in your disability and that you don't have to take it too seriously. Georgie, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on The Happy Hour.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Holly.
Sam Smith and Like I Can on RNIB Connect Radio. Welcome to the Happy Hour. It's our Best of the Year Part 1 special. And of course, since it's cold and dark outside, we thought what better time than to bring back Zoe from Health in Mind Charity with some tips to get us through winter.
Hello everyone, I'm Zoe from Health in Mind. And today I'm going to give you an overview of our Scottish charity and the work we do and share some winter wellbeing tips with you all. Okay, so at Health in Mind, we provide mental health and wellbeing services in a caring and compassionate way. We support people to develop coping strategies and skills that people can do every day in order to live the lives they want to live. So we offer flexibility and choice through a huge range of services and support, which includes one-to-one support and group community-based support, group work, talking therapies, information services, and trauma support. So every year, one in four of us will experience a mental health difficulty. At Health in Mind, we work together with a vision for local communities. So we want to work towards a Scotland where all people are resilient, experience positive mental health and well-being, can realise their potential and participate equally. So the darker and colder months are certainly upon us. So I thought it would be a good time to share some simple well-being tips and tools that we could all use during winter, because let's be honest, winter is definitely coming. Now, remember, some of these might appeal to you, some absolutely will not appeal to you, and that's okay. This is about finding the things that work for you to help maintain your well-being through the winter months, and everybody will be different. Okay, I'm going to share six ideas with you. Number one. Think about the little things that you can do for yourself each day. Like, for example, spending a bit of time outside, cozying up and listening to your favourite radio show, doing 5 minutes of stretching, or simply taking yourself to bed an hour earlier to get a little longer sleep. Number two, connect. Take time to connect with others. This can have a huge impact on how we feel. It could be as simple as giving someone a call, a simple text, or meeting up in person for coffee or lunch. Treat yourself. Number three, we know the change in weather can affect how we're feeling. We do know that. That's why getting outside and embracing nature is important, no matter how freezing cold it is. I personally find this one really hard in the winter months. But being outdoors, even for a few minutes a day, has been shown to improve our mood, help us relax and reduce stress. So get all wrapped up and venture out, even if just for a few short minutes every day. Number four, get creative. So taking time to make something in the winter months can boost our mood. Spend time knitting, singing, painting, cooking, baking, fermenting, whatever takes your fancy. And number five, being more aware of how we are feeling and our surroundings can help our mental health and well-being too. So take some time to sit quietly and focus on just your breathing, your feelings, and the world around you, even if just for a few minutes or seconds even. You might find it helpful to pick a regular time when you will practice this. You could go as far as meditation or mindfulness, and there are loads of apps out there that can help guide you. And number six, talk. If you're feeling low, please do reach out and find someone to talk to. Conversations can literally save lives. And if you're not comfortable talking about your mental health and your well-being with those around you, then there are listening services available out there. You could call the Samaritans, you could call Breathing Space in Scotland, just look them up online. Okay, so that's the six tips for winter I have for you. You can find some winter wellbeing articles on our website. You'll find us at www.health.com. health-in-mind.org.uk, or you can just Google Health and Mind Scotland and it comes up. And we'd love to see you on our social media channels. We'd love to connect with you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Please come and find us online. Thank you so much for listening. And most importantly, please take care of yourself this winter.
Thank you so much, Zoe. Now, if you were listening to the show and thinking, oh, I'd love to be a bit more mindful, but you're not sure how to do that, well, there's an app that can help. So with a quick demo, here's Robin Christofferson.
Alexa, open Headspace.
It looks like it's been a while since you've gotten some Headspace. Would you like to go through the tutorial again?
Yes.
Some days, meditation will feel easy. On others, it might feel difficult. The trick is to gently stay with it each time, no matter how it feels. So look for a place in your routine where this exercise can slot in easily. Research shows it's easier to create a new habit when we do it at about the same time each day. I recommend doing it first thing in the morning, but you might need to be flexible. For now, find somewhere you won't be disturbed. Don't worry too much about background noise. I'll explain how to deal with that. It might be easier at first if you have some peace and quiet, though. Make sure you're sitting comfortably before you start. Unless you're used to sitting cross-legged on the floor, I'd recommend using an upright chair. Sit with your legs and arms uncrossed, feet flat on the floor, and hands just resting in the lap or on your legs. And try to keep your back straight too, but not too tense. Sometimes putting a small cushion or a rolled up towel behind your lower back can help. And that's it. You're now ready to get some headspace.
Now that you're ready to meditate, let's get started. Would you like to begin today's meditation?
Help.
You can always ask for today's meditation, a sleep exercise, or sleep sounds. Keep in mind if you connect a Headspace account, you can access more meditations by saving them on the Headspace app. Would you like to begin today's meditation?
Yes.
Everyone wants to be happy, even those who hurt us. Realizing this does not negate their actions, but it helps us to create the conditions for understanding and forgiveness. So very often in life, if somebody else does something that hurts us in some way, ironically, they will often let go of it quite quickly themselves, while we tend to carry it around in our mind for a very long time, thinking about it, not only feeling hurt by it, but perhaps feeling a sense of hostility.
Hello.
Towards that.
Stop. Man, he has the right voice for this, doesn't he?
Indeed he does. Thanks, Robin. Now, earlier in the year, I spoke with adventurer and motivational speaker Miles Hilton Barber. So we're looking back at that conversation very shortly. Miles Hilton Barber grew up in Zimbabwe with normal sight, dreaming of one day becoming a fighter pilot just like his father. At 18, Miles applied to join the Royal Rhodesian Air Force, but to his disappointment, he failed the eyesight test. At 21, both him and his brother Jeff were diagnosed with a degenerative eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa, which would lead to total blindness for them both. For the next 30 years, Miles lived with a kind of victim mentality, thinking that blindness was a barrier preventing him from undertaking adventurous activities. However, at the age of 50, Miles turned things around and has set numerous world records, undertaking extreme events across the world in fields of mountaineering, desert and polar ultramarathons, scuba diving, motor racing, long distance aerobatics and supersonic flying, amongst many other achievements. I'm honored to say that Miles joins me now. Hi, Miles.
Hello, Holly. Lovely to be with you and all the beautiful people listening.
For around 30 years, you thought that your vision impairment would be a barrier. What helped you find the light and turn things around at the age of 50?
Holly, as you mentioned, I grew up in Zimbabwe, which is a country just above South Africa. I'd never met another blind person, and my condition meant I lost my sight relatively slowly. And I just thought it was the worst thing. Everybody told me blindness was a barrier. It was a handicap. My best friend said it was the worst thing that could happen to anybody in the whole world, and it's happened to you. Nice having friends. Anyway, what changed my life, Holly? I'm married. My wife is English. And after a number of years, 16 years, I moved over to the UK with her. And for the first time, I started meeting other blind people who weren't embarrassed, or people who had confidence, they had dignity, they had independence, they were lawyers and solicitors, they had white sticks, guide dogs, living happy, fulfilled lives. And I suddenly realized that blindness wasn't the end of the world. So I did a lot of training. I think, Holly, all of us, when we lose our sight, it's like going into a tunnel. I initially went into this tunnel of sight loss, and I just had a victim mentality and was only meeting other blind people. The RNIB gave me some training, and my local Society for the Blind. And I suddenly realized that life is just as fulfilled having no sight at all. I'm totally blind, and I'm more happy, more fulfilled, more successful than when I could see. For me, and for all of you people listening, the huge key is this: whoever you are, get in touch with your local Society for the Blind, RNIB. Learn how to live independently. Cooking, mobility, so important, using a computer. So I initially was only doing what other blind people did. I worked for the RNIB as an employment consultant. I knew I could never do more than other blind people. But my brother, also blind, then built a yacht in his back garden in Durban by feel, and then sailed it solo to Australia, Holly, 51 days in the Southern Ocean, all by himself with speech output on his navigational instrument. So that was my kick up the backside. And since then, I've realized I don't need to be limited to what other blind people have done, because there's lots of things other people haven't done, which is why I've started having fun flying, motor racing, skydiving, scuba diving. And I realized the only limits are the ones I accept myself. And so for any blind person listening, or parents or friends, I've never been as happy or fulfilled as I am now. And the key is, don't feel sorry for yourself. Get out of the tunnel. You will never get into the light at the other end of the tunnel unless you realize you've got to train mobility, computers, everything. Everything is there. It's the best time in world history to be blind. You've got so much support. So get out and find it and use it.
That's fantastic advice and really encouraging as well. Would you say that meeting other blind people helped you to accept your sight loss?
Oh, Holly, it was a massive turning point. I only started using a white stick when I came to England, or a little bit in Zimbabwe. I was so embarrassed. I couldn't walk to the local shop 200 yards away to buy a loaf of bread. I was too embarrassed. And then I met other blind people who weren't embarrassed. A white stick is good. You find, you can walk around very safely with it. But a guide dog, I've had two guide dogs. They're wonderful. It's like having a bicycle or a Rolls Royce. So meeting other blind people transformed my life. And I suddenly realized I didn't know how people lived without sight. But if they could, then I jolly well wanted to learn. And that was a big turning point. All of you, get in touch with other mature blind people who can give you some advice, and your life will be transformed.
I think that's brilliant, because we often focus on the people that tell us negative things about sight loss, and they focus on the things we can't do rather than the things we can. So I think it's really important to focus on the encouraging people and the supportive people that we need to surround ourselves with. Your view on your life changed to more of an optimistic one, but life throws us many challenges at times. How do you get through these challenges?
I now realize that my quality of life is the same as anybody else, really. The trick, there's a lovely prayer: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things in my life I cannot change, the courage to change those that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I wasn't optimistic as a kid growing up. I was the youngest in my class, very low confidence. But I guess good friends, good company, mixed with other optimistic people is a big help as well. And what amazed me, I'm now in my early 70s, Holly, still wondering what to do when I grow up. I remember myself going blind and thinking what a useless person I was. Now, I've been making my living speaking at corporate events around the world. Most global companies you could think of, they've flown me around the world. I've spoken in 74 countries, about 1,600 corporate events. I've been paid a lot of money as a silly blind twit, going to talk to senior leadership, Rolls-Royce, Airbus, Unilever, pharmaceutical companies, speaking to their most senior leadership, and they pay me to give them advice and wisdom about life. So what is that telling you? That's telling you that blind people learn things about life. We've got a quality of life. We often know more about life, what it's all about, than people chasing the dollar and stuff out there. So what I'm saying to you is that you can be vision impaired or blind. You can have a wonderful, high quality life, and people want to hear from you because very often we've got more wisdom and understanding of life than people who can see. Helen Keller, she was deaf and blind, and she said that sight without vision is equal to blindness. And I want to tell you, a lot of people after me speaking at corporate events say, Miles, you've opened my eyes to realize I can do so much more. So I'm opening the eyes of sighted people, not just helping other blind people open their eyes as well.
That's fantastic. I once saw a quote that said, you don't need sight to have a vision. And that's something that's always stuck with me.
Yes. Blind people, once you realize it's a different life, but the quality is easily as high. I've got a higher quality of life than so many sighted people I meet. As I said, senior executives in the world tearing their hair out, burning up the best years of their life, and they're not even happy. So they come to me for advice. Blind man, tell us about life. How can we, you know, what is success all about? And so all I'm saying is that anyone listening now, visually impaired or blind, it's a wonderful, wonderful, precious gift, this thing called life. Every day, don't waste it. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Catch up with other blind people who are more further down the road. ONB, Local Society for the Blind. Get out there. Adventures, Holly, so important. I have a sighted guide called John Cook, who's been my guide, me wanting to pull a sledge to the South Pole, climbing in the Himalayas, running across deserts. All of us need to exercise. I know, Holly, you do tandem cycling. Any visually impaired person as well, find out anything sports you'd like to do. Get hold of the local club. The chances are there's someone who'd be willing to help you. Goal ball, cricket, football, running. There's loads of things blind people do. And you know, a lot of people represent their country in athletics, Paralympics. The world is an oyster. Let's get out there and explore it.
Fantastic motivation there and great advice on keeping active and getting involved in sport. Your dream was to become a fighter pilot, and you actually made that dream happen by flying from London to Sydney in a microlight. Other than that, what's the most memorable moment you've had whilst setting world records across the world, along with fundraising as well?
Oh, Holly, I've had such fun. Of course, how can I fly if I can't see? I had all of my flight instruments converted into speech, into my headphones, and that's how I flew and navigated. One of my exciting things, I flew a supersonic fighter through the sound barrier. Anyone who's seen Top Gun or listened to it, I took off down the runway in this tiny little supersonic jet, much more powerful than the F-14s and Top Gun, went vertical at the end of the runway. And just over a minute after takeoff, I was at 50,000 feet doing Mach 1.4. I was became the first blind pilot in world history to vomit at supersonic speed. But I was flying, I could fly from one football goalpost to the other in 0.2 of a second. 5 football fields a second. And this is a silly blind idiot who went blind and thought his world had come to the end. And here I am flying, doing aerobatics. Oh, who'd have thought that a blind person can do it? And of me, with no confidence at school, youngest in my class, very low self-confidence. Now I've had the most wonderful life traveling the world, and as I said, top global companies paying me for advice and wisdom to help them become more successful. Oh, the only limits in our lives, Holly, are those we accept ourselves. And I've learned, look back on my life and think, did I do those things? And it's a mix of the grace of God, good friends, and not being afraid to say, can you give me some advice and help? And getting out there and pushing the limits, and you'll realize how easy it is to do so much more.
I absolutely love the encouraging words there. I'm sure many of our listeners can take something from that. If people would like to keep up with your work and see what you're getting up to and just have that bit of motivation whenever they need it, where can they find you?
Holly, anyone using a computer, just do a search for Miles Hilton-Barber. That's the name of my website as well. YouTube, there's a lot of talks that I've done, and probably stuff of me motor racing and skydiving, scuba diving, stuff like that. Lots of talks. There's a TED talk as well, a 17-minute talk. And all I would say to people is that I'm happier now as a blind man than when I could see. And I need to say thank you to the RNAB and all the local associations who helped to train me. Live each day to the full. I want to close with a poem. It's a lady called Mary Jean Iron, and it's called Normal Day. Here we are in the pandemic, you know, thinking about the future of the past. Don't neglect today is a wonderful gift. It goes like this. Normal day, let me be aware of the treasure that you are. Let me not pass you by in quest of some rare and perfect tomorrow. For one day, I will dig my fingers into the soil, or bury my hands and my head in my pillow, or raise my hands to the sky and long for, more than all the world, your return. Oh, beautiful person, don't waste today and think backwards or look forwards. Today is a gift from God. Live it to the full. It's a precious gift, and all of us can do more with our lives. And to all of you, good luck. You can do it. Sending you all a big virtual hug.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much for those encouraging words, your brilliant insight and advice as well. Miles, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much, Holly, and good luck to you. And thank you, RNIB Connect, for having me on your programme.
Anytime, thank you.
Across the UK, on Freeview Channel 730 and on smart devices. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
And that's the end of our Best of the Year special.
Fortunately, we still have part two to come, so make sure you tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. for more of our best interviews and tips from the year. We'll be sharing our conversation with activist Lucy Edwards and the blind poet Dave Steele.
Plus more tips and advice for this time of the year. And Holly will also be getting sweaty and trying out a fitness app for us.
Apparently so. Now we are going to leave you with this track, ending the show. It's our music therapy moment.
It's a beautiful track from artist Phineas, released in 2020 at the height of the pandemic and unrest in the States. He had this to say about the meaning behind this song during an interview with the Wall Street Journal magazine. I would hope that it gives people at least a momentary amount of optimism, because I think optimism is very important in terms of getting through this with your health and with your sanity.
A lovely message. If you'd like to share your own music therapy moment on our show, just get in touch.
Yes, get in touch. It's radio@rnab.org.uk for our email. Twitter is @RNABradio, and we're on Facebook, RNAB Connect Radio.
But for now, here's Phineas and what they'll say about us.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat, Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoy the Happy Hour podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.